And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO with Martin Willis and Michael Lauck. Please remember to visit the website, podcastufo.com. Check out the latest blogs and forums. And while you're there, don't forget to like our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. And guess what? Michael Lauck will be joining us today. I said last week he wouldn't be, but we figured it out. Today is podcast number 69 with Stanton T. Friedman. Well, a while back, we asked if people would write a review for us on iTunes, if you listen that way. And we do appreciate that. A lot of you did. And I want to thank you all for that, who participated. And some people said some very nice things. But of course, I have to focus on this one. A person enjoyed our show, but we weren't quite up to snuff with open minds, and that the host, Martin Willis, have some awkward moments with guests. And I don't know, Michael, is it true that I have some awkward moments?
I didn't mean to, but anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. All right. So what's going on with the news?
Well, first up.
Okay. Sorry about that. What's going on with the news?
Well, first up, we found out that Russia is not ready to fight an alien civilization. When a journalist asked a Russian official at the country's main satellite control center if the country was ready to fight aliens, the question was not only taken seriously, but answered with a firm no. Sergei Brezhnev, the deputy chief of the Titov Main Test and Space Systems Control Center, said, according to a translation provided by the RT Network website, "We are unfortunately not ready to fight extraterrestrial civilizations." He also added that our center was not tasked with that. You can read the original article from the RT Network website and find actually links to all our articles in our show notes at podcastufo.com.
Well, you know, I think if any particular country is ready to fight extraterrestrials, I would think it would be the Russian. Am I sounding awkward again?
Us or the Russians, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a little surprised because, you know, I watched a YouTube video a while back, and it basically said that there is some type of plan in place for if we are going to defend ourselves.
Are you there?
And rightly so.
I can't tell when you're being awkward or if you're just cutting out.
I'm going to try to stop being awkward, Michael, really. I have to work on it. I'm sorry. Okay. So what do you think about that?
I'm sure there's been some kind of logistic, you know, exercises thought of it. Personally, looking back at our own history, anytime, you know, you're perfectly happy on your island and somebody in big, bright, better, bigger ships shows up with from somewhere else, whether they, you know, overtly conquer you or not, it doesn't seem to ever go very well. So I think it's probably not a bad idea to have a plan in place just in case.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on the flip side, if they can make it here, they're probably going to stomp us.
Yeah, it's not really much we can do. So it's very awkward. So let's move on.
Okay. Next, we have news of a viral video of UFOs over a smoking ship. And this video was simply a series of lights disappearing over a smoking ship, but it has been drawing a great deal of attention on YouTube. Some are saying, though, that these are just merely jets or flares. Check out the video and some commentary through the links in our show notes. We have the original YouTube video. We also link to Lee Spiegel's analysis of the video, and he talks to an expert who feels like they probably are just afterburners that are being cut and therefore not being seen anymore. Did you get a chance to watch that video?
I did. And, you know, if it was me and I was standing on a smoking ship, I would be shooting up some flares myself. So that kind of, you know, to me, I would think that would be the most logical answer.
Yeah, it I don't know what it is, but it wasn't compelling enough to me to say, ah, this is some kind of unexplainable phenomenon. It was just lights in a video.
Yeah, lights in the sky is lights in the sky, as they always say. It's kind of funny how the media will grab a hold of something, you know, kind of unspectacular and make a big deal out of it. And then when there's something really quite amazing, you don't see much of it out there.
New York abductions research. Syracuse New Times reporter Cheryl Costa is collecting stories of abduction from the upstate New York area. She also presents in her column a roundup of UFO sightings in the Syracuse vicinity. You can connect to her article and her upcoming New York Skies events through the links in our show notes.
Now, is she talking about media? Is she a serious journalist? Or I saw she mixed Halloween in with this whole thing.
Yeah, she did, but she does seem to be overall serious about the UFO topic. She presents a series of these New York Skies lectures, and this isn't the first time she's spoken of it. She just happens to mention Halloween, which is, of course, coming up.
Yeah, and there'll be a lot of people out there looking up at the skies, I'm sure, getting abducted and all that. Maybe. I'm sorry. This is awkward. Why don't you just move on to the next story?
Okay, and this is my favorite story of the week, I think. And that would be that there is a new children's show that was inspired by the Maury Island incident. Shuki Levy, one of the team who brought the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers to the United States, is back with a new show, which he said was inspired by the story of the Maury Island UFO incident, as well as alien abductions. The Tribe of the Wild will follow five teenagers who have been abducted by aliens in a format that seems vaguely similar to the Power Rangers themes. There's no word on which network will be carrying it or if it'll be syndicated, but you can expect to see it next season.
Wow, that sounds like a great children's show to me. Now, Maury Island, that's the one that happened actually before the Kenneth Arnold.
It supposedly happened a few days before and didn't really become publicly known until after, correct?
Yeah. And actually, I think Kenneth Arnold actually investigated that or something like that.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And this is a thing where the molten drips down on the guy's arm and the dog actually dies. It was kind of a...
Right.
I can't really see a children's story out of this yet.
Well, I don't know that it's directly connected. He just mentioned that was a story that got him thinking about UFOs and kids and, you know.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the Power Rangers, you know, got their powers from aliens as well, so.
I did not know that. I'm glad I did not know that, but this is getting a little awkward, Michael. Sorry. Let's move on. Please.
Now?
Yeah.
Okay. And October 26th brings us the inaugural New England UFO Conference. The first of what will hopefully be an annual series of UFO conferences will be presented in... Tell me how to say that again.
Leominster.
Will be presented in Leominster, Massachusetts at the Town Hall. In addition to local researchers, the New England UFO Conference will feature Peter Robbins, Kathleen Martin, Stanton T. Friedman, and more. The conference is organized by researcher Steve Fermani, and tickets, which are $25 now, $35 at the door, are currently on sale. We have linked, of course, to their website in our show notes. And Martin, this is kind of in your neck of the woods. Is there any chance you will be making an appearance?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, right on our homepage of our website, you can click right on the website link. There's a banner there you can click to buy tickets as well. Yes, I'm going to be there. It'll be fun. And if you happen to be listening and you happen to be going, please do come up and say hi. I got a couple of emails from people that were at the last conference I was at and said they saw me there. So don't be afraid to say hi. We'll have some fun.
Martin is not an unapproachable guy.
No.
Go on up and talk to him.
No. It's,
it might be a little awkward, but
it'll
be okay.
It might be a little awkward, but That's right. Well, that's it for the news, right, Michael?
That is it for this week. And we are recording a little bit early in the week, everyone. So if we've missed some huge story, we apologize. We're going to blame it on the time.
Yeah, like another fireball. There seem to be showing up everywhere. You never know. But anyway, thanks.
I'm bored with fireballs at this point.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot. And I promise next week the news will be cleaner than this, a little, you know, no awkwardness, I promise. All right. So thank you, Michael. And Stanton Friedman's coming right up. Talk to you next week, Michael.
Talk to you next week.
Michael. Yeah. See you next week.
This was not my first space flight. Previous assignments for my newspaper had sent me to the moon many times, but never into the vast reaches of deep space.
I'm with Stan Friedman in Portland, Maine. How are you doing, Stan?
I'm doing well. Interesting conference.
Yes, and it's great to finally meet you. We've talked a few times in the past. What do you think about the silly thing of the Area 51 finally coming out?
Total baloney.
Yeah.
Everybody's known about Area 51 for decades, and its job was indeed to develop secret systems like the U-2 and the SR-71 and a whole bunch more.
Yeah.
And everybody knew the CIA financed it to begin with. They financed the U-2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a matter of record. Ben Rich has talked about it. He was the Lockheed guy, and Kelly Johnson and those guys.
Yeah.
So it was a grand overstatement. It tells us nothing. As a matter of fact, there is. It seemed to perpetuate in some of the articles I saw this nonsense that once those started flying, that they were responsible for a majority of UFO reports. Dr.
Right.
Bruce McAbee, an optical physicist, serious researcher, did a look at that, and that's total nonsense. The sightings didn't go up when that happened. Besides, you know, who's going to report a U-2 as a UFO? It can't hover, can't make right-angle turns, to say the least. It is not silent.
Yeah.
It can't land out in the middle of nowhere and take off from out in the middle of nowhere. Why would you make a big deal? Some pilot would say, hey, where do we get that super high-flying airplane? You know, because it could exceed the other capabilities of the other vehicles we had. But so that was much ado about nothing. And
why do you think they came out with it all of a sudden?
Well, it isn't all of a sudden. The guy who made noises... Mr. Haynes was the CIA historian. His article saying that they were, once the U-2 was starting to be tested, that was responsible for a large number of sightings. That was discredited years ago. So I don't know why. I think it was this guy at the George Washington University, was it? Whatever place he works. well, they didn't censor out, Area 51, so that's a big step. I don't think it's a big step at all.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly doesn't tell us anything about flying saucers.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've driven by Area 51. Big deal. It doesn't, you know. Having worked under security for 14 years, I am certainly convinced that the government has the absolute right to conduct secret research hither, thither, yon, wherever they darn please.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I shocked people by saying I am not for disclosing everything we know about flying saucers. Well, why not? Aren't we entitled? No, we're not. There are national security implications here. Why should the United States release information that they may have learned, technological data, from wreckage of saucers, from measurements made of saucers flying, etc., if the Russians and Chinese don't release what they have? You don't give your potential enemies data to play with.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes no sense. And, you know, are we ready? What I say needs to be done, I would like the government to say that, indeed, the planet's being visited.
Mm-hmm.
And there are conferences to be held, international conferences, looking at the economic, religious, psychological, et cetera, aspects of this. The planet certainly isn't ripe for an Earthling attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people need to stand back and say, hey, we are spending $1 trillion this year on things military on this planet. 15,000 kids die every single day of preventable disease or starvation.
Mm-hmm.
This is a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. One of the implications, if an announcement were to be made, is that I think the younger generation would want us to think of ourselves as Earthlings.
Instead of territorial.
Canadian, Greek, Peruvian, et cetera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no government on this planet that wants its citizens to owe their allegiance to the planet.
That's right.
Nationalism's the only game in town that I've been able to find.
Yeah.
So you can't drop a bombshell on the planet and then act as if you hadn't done anything to upset the balance. I mean, who speaks for planet Earth? Sounds like a simple-minded question. We'll hold an election.
Yeah.
Yeah, but wait a minute. The Chinese got 1.3 billion people. We got 310 million people. India's got 1 billion people. One vote, one person? Forget it.
Right.
We're not going to go for that.
Yeah.
And so we need a plan and the freedom to move in that direction instead of spending all this money on things military.
Well, like United Nations, perhaps, or, I mean,
kind of auspices beyond. Mm-hmm. United Nations isn't very powerful, but it has some clout. Not enough, maybe, but the kicker here is that we need to recognize a couple of things. How we look to others. Mm-hmm. I think anybody coming here would say primitive society, major activity is tribal warfare.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of World War II, there were three signs that soon these idiot Earthlings, who just killed 50 million of their own kind, who destroyed 1,700 cities, soon will be able to go to the stars, soon meaning less than 100 years, which is nothing on a cosmic timescale.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked on fusion propulsion system. You want to spend the dough? It's time to go. You can develop fusion rockets that kick particles out the back end that have 10 million times as much energy per particle as they can get in a dumb old chemical rocket. Mm. Fusion is where the energy's at. If you look around the universe, where's all the energy come from? The stars. And what is happening in the stars? Nuclear fusion.
Yeah.
There's no secret about that. So once they realize that, three signs that would alert anybody visiting here, say in 1947, that soon we'd be going out there. First is nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
The second is powerful rockets being used for destruction. Not to send mail from Germany to England, but to kill them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is the beginning of the electronics revolution, that is radar. It didn't exist really before the Second World War in Europe. And so you put those together, and soon the idiots will be on the loose. Isn't it amazing? There was only one place in the world where you could check on all three of those, southeastern New Mexico in 1947.
Mm.
First atomic bomb, Trinity site, Yep. That's where we were firing to capture German V-2s, and that's where we had our best radar, because sometimes the rockets went in the wrong direction. Not a good idea. I admit, I had an English astronomer on a television program very haughtily say, well, they could have gone to the Soviet Union. I said, sorry, they didn't test their first A-bomb till 49.
Right. Yes, that's right.
So let's get it right, folks.
Yeah. Back on the facts again. I want to talk a little bit. I know we're running out of time here. Jesse Marcel Jr.
Yes.
And recently he passed away.
Yes.
And you were the first to reach out to his father many years
ago. I was the first one to talk to his father, yes. Yeah. And I've been in Jesse Jr.'s home, as a matter of fact. I think I'm the only one who's been in both their homes.
Ah, yeah.
I interviewed Jesse Sr. for my movie UFOs Are Real in Houma, Louisiana.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really admired Jesse Jr.
Yes.
As a courageous, competent guy. People don't realize he was an ear, nose, and throat specialist. He was a flight surgeon. He was a colonel, not an honorary colonel. He earned it. And he got called back into the military at age 68.
Amazing.
And he flew 225 combat hours as a flight surgeon. 68! I mean, it's ridiculous.
That is something.
And he, incidentally...
A true patriot. Really.
Oh, no question. Yeah. He actually had been shot down in a place we never were, Cambodia.
We never were?
Well, that was the official line, you know.
Yeah. He was actually shot down?
In a helicopter, and he made it back from behind enemy lines. So he wasn't bragging about this. We were talking, and So, and he's always appreciated the fact that he did make it back.
Yeah.
You know, it was a tough adventure.
Now, I remember hearing the story about you were at this radio station, someone didn't show up or something, and they started talking about Jesse Marcel.
Well, very straightforward. I was going to lecture that night at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I was supposed to do three interviews at the local television station. Did the first two. This is 1978. And the third reporter was nowhere to be found. This is before cell phones.
Yeah.
And the station manager is giving me coffee. He's looking at his watch. He knew I had other things to do. He didn't want to lose the interview. So he's chit-chatting, and out of the blue, he says, you know, the guy you ought to talk to is Jesse Marcel. Brilliant investigator that I am. I said, who's he?
Yeah.
Well, we're old ham radio buddies. He lives in Houma. Well, that didn't tell me anything. I didn't know where Houma was. I've been there since to talk to Jesse. I said, well, what's special? Well, he handled records. One of those saucers you were interested in when he was in the military. What? Where'd that come from? You know.
Now, did he talk about that openly to
Couldn't deny it. I found out later his name was in the newspapers. His picture was in the newspapers in 47. I didn't know it at that time.
But did that really start the ball rolling in Roswell?
After I talked to him, I shared the information with Bill Moore.
Yep.
I heard his second story at a lecture, after a lecture I gave in Bemidji, Minnesota. And Bill had a third story about an English actor who, driving across New Mexico, heard about Roswell on the radio.
Mm.
We could pin down the date. Jesse didn't have a precise date.
Mm-hmm.
And the English actor's son lived in Canada, and he gave us a date, and Bill went to the University of Minnesota Library. There were the articles, early July. Verifying what I'd heard in the other two stories. So in the next year and a half, we located 62 people in conjunction with the event.
Wow.
The old-fashioned way. There was no internet back then, you know, for finding people.
Now, wasn't the National Enquirer were the first to publish something about this? Am I getting that wrong?
Well, they did publish. They did an interview with Jesse because I'd given their reporter Jesse's name because the first book was coming out, The Roswell Incident.
Yeah.
And, they weren't. The Roswell Incident was the first book about Roswell. And the thing was, we'd found 62 people. By 1986, we'd found 92 people. It was a lot of hard slugging. I'm sure I got lucky. I looked in, what was the name of it? A book that listed all the newspapers. Was there a newspaper in Roswell? What did I know? And at that time, I'd never been there, of course. Why would anybody go to Roswell? You know, been there many times since. Found out there was a Roswell newspaper called, asked for the editor from 1947. Long gone. What do you need? Well, I got an article here. Bill had sent me copies of the articles, Bill Moore, that he had. It says a guy named Walter Howe taught. It's spelled four different ways in the articles. Before I could finish the sentence, she says, oh, his wife works here.
Right, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Walter was from Chicago. He was stationed there in 47. You don't expect him to still be there in 48. So I talked to the wife and then to Walter. He had a base yearbook. It was a big help in finding people. I got lucky. Luck is what happens when you're ready for it. I checked with information looking for anybody named Brazel, the rancher, because that once Jesse, once we had dates and found the articles, and the gal says, what city? And I say, I don't know. Southeastern New Mexico. She says, well, let's see, I have a William Brazel in Carrizozo. Is that in southeastern New Mexico? Yes, sir. Well, it turns out that was the son of the rancher.
Wow.
And he'd just gotten his phone less than 2 weeks earlier.
Now, did he openly talk about it, or did he even know anything?
He handled pieces of the wreckage as well, sure.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he wandered around on horseback out there, and he found pieces from time to time. And he opened his mouth at the bar, and he was visited by military guys who said, we understand you have some wreckage. We'd like it. And I guess the discussion was along the lines, and if I don't give it to you, we'll take it.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
Is that in there? Is that in your book at all?
Sure.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about today in Roswell? Do you think it's mixed with too much myth to really move ahead?
Well, the most of the myth has come from the nasty, noisy negativists, the people who attacked the case. I just heard today.
But there's also fringe people, too, that kind of, like, really
get
over the top.
Well, there are some fringes, yes, but people pay them a lot less attention than they pay the nasty debunkers.
Yeah.
Who come on as if they have really done research here, the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. There's a good example of irrationality. Dr. Joe Nickel, whose degrees are in English, incidentally, but he's their chief scientist, up at what used to be SICOP in Buffalo, New York. Anyway, I was being interviewed in Roswell. He was in Los Angeles. We could hear each other, but couldn't see each other. And he was asked what happened. Well, some PR guy made up the story just to get attention. I said, don't you know his name? Well, no. Well, I've known Walter Hout for 20 years. I've been in his home. We've had meals together. The notion that the PR guy for the most elite military group in the world, which is what was at Roswell,
right,
the 509th. I say most elite because they, the only ones who ever dropped atomic bombs, that the PR guy would put out a press release without the boss's approval is absolute nonsense.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. 9 years later, that same organization, cover stories, new data on Roswell and stuff, repeated the same garbage. An unknown PR guy put out an unauthorized press release. Everybody who's done a book about Roswell talks about Walter Hout, not Joe. He didn't even know his name. That's typical of debunkdom. Baloney Incorporated. They ought to open a delicatessen they put out so much.
Yeah. Do you think the research that's being... I know the people are dying off, of course, by old age here, but do you think the research being done now is thorough enough to gain any more evidence?
Only if we can get some people who may be inspired by people like Dr. Jesse Marcel.
Yes.
Say, you know, I'm getting old, maybe I ought to reveal what I have.
Yeah.
Pull out that piece of wreckage from the shirt drawer, you know, stuff like that.
That would be nice.
I certainly don't know where to look in the government records systems. I've been to 20 archives.
Wow.
And try to find something when you don't have a specific thing. It's like Air Force headquarters records back in the 50s. It was 8,000 feet of material. That's shelf space.
Oh, my goodness.
Shelf space.
And that's with files.
That's just Air Force headquarters. And some of it's still classified.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Eisenhower Library, I've been going there for years, but for a long time they had 250,000 pages of classified National Security Council material. He went out of office in 61.
Mm.
So you can't, you know, anybody thinks... I get people telling me, well, Stan, they declassify all that stuff after 20 years. And I said, no, they don't. I've been there.
Now, I watched some video. I know a little off topic here, but I watched a video where you're holding up this classified release document from the FOIA, and it's all blacked out. And now they white it out?
Is that... Well, they're two different. The blacked out one was CIA.
Oh, I see.
And I'd heard that the NSA, you know, the friendly guys, no such agency.
Comes up quite a bit.
They're in a lot of trouble right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, the NSA... I called them. I heard they were they're putting out some stuff that they'd withheld before on the grounds of national security. So I called and I said, yeah, I'd like to get a set of copies. He said, what's your name? Stanton Friedman. Oh, I know about you.
Really?
That worried me a little bit. Well, it turns out that Philip Klass, one of the nastiest, noisiest,
yes,
negativists, had told them that I show off one of their early documents on television that was almost completely blacked out,
yeah,
as a justification of a federal court judge, and didn't tell people it was sources and methods information that was why it was withheld. Now, don't tell me you got a document that's 2% okay,
yeah,
and 98% is sources and methods.
It's a joke.
Yeah. So because of Phil, when the NSA put out 156 top secret Umbra UFO documents, you can read one sentence per page, everything else is whited out. That's to keep me from showing blacked out on television.
That's,
they think we're stupid,
funny,
you know.
Yeah.
But, so, and that, well, these are old documents, these 80s time frame.
Now, here's something I never thought of. Do you think that any of these documents would ever be re-released with the things not blacked out at some point?
Well, you can always ask, and once in a while they do that, but I don't think any of these would.
Yeah.
Look, it would be nice if some media group decided to pay attention to the facts. For example, Air Force General Carol Bolander was an engineer, worked on the Lunar Excursion Module, which we landed in 1969 on the moon, and then was asked, what should we do about Project Blue Book, because the Condon Committee had recommended that it be closed.
Mm-hmm.
He had no previous connection with them. But a good engineer takes an assignment. The job is over on Lunar Excursion Module. And as he said to me when I talked to him 10 years later, at least I didn't have to work 12-hour days anymore. He put out a memo which resulted in the closure of Project Blue Book at the end of 69. In this memo, he said, moreover, reports of UFOs which could affect national security are made in accordance with JNAP 146, that's Joint Army-Navy Air Force Publication 146, or Air Force Manual 55-11, and are not part of the Blue Book system, which is a remarkable statement.
Mm-hmm.
Two paragraphs later, if we close Project Blue Book, the public won't have a place to report UFO sightings. However, as previously noted, reports which could affect national security will continue to be handled using the regulations established for that purpose. So I managed to locate him. I didn't know about this until years later. Managed to locate him. I like people with not common names. Carol Bolander is not a common name.
Yeah, easy to find. Yep.
And a general at that. I said, it sounds to me, I explained to him, I'd had a clearance for 14 years, been very interested in reading your memo and stuff. I said, it sounds to me like you're saying there were two separate communication channels, one for reports which could affect national security, and I gave him an example. I say, suppose a saucer goes down the runway at a SAC base where nuclear weapons are stored. That's a national security problem, because there ain't supposed to be nobody there. You know?
Yeah.
If my wife and I go outside and at the end of our driveway, we look up and see a saucer flying by. Big deal. Happens all the time, all over the place. And he agreed, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize the Air Force had been lying since 69 when they said, we have no further interest in UFOs?
Yeah. Those reports
so
are going somewhere.
It would
somewhere.
Be nice, yeah, if Washington Post would publish the Bolander memo.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy to supply them with a copy, or the New York Times. I mean, the thing you worry about, people forget, John Kennedy said that he wished the New York Times had reported about the potential landing in Cuba. would have saved us the embarrassment. You know, they knew about it and restrained themselves.
Yeah.
If any of the major media would do their job, it could be done in less than 6 months. You know, because we know that this data is there. We know Bollinger's memo exists. We got all these blacked out CIA UFO documents. You're not covering anything else? Okay, release it.
Yeah.
Six words, you tell me? My favorite is one that says deny in toto. They couldn't even read six words on a page.
Really?
A CIA top secret Umbra UFO document.
Now, did they actually release the document blanked out total? Are you saying? Or they wouldn't release? They did?
Yeah.
That's a joke, is it?
Of course it's a joke.
Yeah.
But that's the point here. Anybody who says there's no cover up?
Yeah.
Tell me what's underneath. And I've had people say, Stan, why don't you just scrape off the black? I say, they send you Xerox. They don't send you the original. They're not stupid.
Yeah.
They know you idiots in the press aren't doing your job. You know?
Yeah.
But, no, it's easy to establish that there's a cover-up.
Yeah.
About UFOs. And at least the NSA and the CIA and probably NRO and everybody else.
Now, one more question I want to ask. Why do you think the press is so hot and cold on this topic? In other words, like, they'll get involved a little bit with something and then they just ignore it and it goes away.
Well, it's a complex thing. One of the dozen PhD theses that's been done was done on press coverage of UFOs by a man who became the dean of the School of Journalism, Dr. Herbert Strentz at Drake University in Iowa.
That's something.
He looked at 10,000 clippings, which would drive any normal person crazy, but he had some strong comments about the inadequacy of the coverage, of failure to dig out the right stuff and all this sort of thing. I think what we're really, I'll play Dr. Friedman, medical doctor. I call it the David Susskind syndrome. Remember David?
He was yes.
a talk show host.
Yeah.
I got a call from his people. I was living in Southern California and they wanted to do a show and could I supply them with a good abductee? And I got Betty Hill and a good skeptic. I said, there aren't any, but here's how to reach Phil Klass. A good recent case, the coin helicopter case, that happened less than 2 weeks before that. They wanted all kinds of stuff for me to send them that to New York. So I did that, and they brought me in. And while we're taping the show in segments, I'm sitting next to Dave, and he says, you know, I read the New York Times. I don't see anything in there that says these things are real. So the Susskind syndrome, we admit if aliens were visiting, that would be a big story. Nobody denies that.
Yeah.
If there's a cosmic Watergate, is government's covering stuff up, that's a big story. But if those were true, I, who take great pride in keeping up with big stories,
would know
about it.
Yeah.
And I don't, so it must not be. And why should I waste my time on something that can't possibly be real?
Yeah.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm not going to
look. Exactly.
Yeah. You know. So that's my best answer. On the other hand, you know, within 2 weeks of the start of World War II, they set up a censorship place. Can't talk about uranium.
I remember you telling me about that, yeah.
Yeah, it was true.
Yeah.
And so I think that the press, the guy who covers a baseball game knows far more about baseball than the guys who write UFO articles.
Mm-hmm.
And they refuse to talk to the right people because they know there's nothing to it. I mean, how could the New York Times, in good faith, publish the crash test dummy explanation for the Roswell incident when a picture in the Air Force report shows the guy who was in charge of the program with whom I spoke, but they didn't, and it shows one of the crash test dummies. 6 feet tall, 175 pounds, and in an Air Force flight uniform.
Right.
Because it affects the passage through the air.
Yeah.
How could they publish that when I talked to the guy in charge? None were dropped until 6 years after Roswell.
Right.
Time travel for crash test dummies, which is ridiculous. And nobody seeing one of those dummies would think it was an alien. How do you morph a 6 foot tall dummy into a 4 feet tall guy with a big head?
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't compute.
Yeah. That's another
ridiculous.
That was
on the front page above the fold on a Sunday. There's no better selection of place for an article in the American
and
media.
And the New York Times, did you say?
New York Times.
Yeah.
So They need somebody to spank them. Hey, you guys. You know, yeah. Why aren't you doing your job?
Yeah, no research, really. Yeah.
So, maybe they've all been asked by the current president, don't ever say anything decent about flying saucer. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's as good an explanation as I know.
Yeah.
And there's arrogance also. And part of it is, you know, Roswell happened 2 years after the war. This is the government that saved the world. We have to believe in our government. Look at the wonderful things they've done and all the rest of that. They wouldn't lie to us. They say there's nothing to it. There must not be anything to it, you know. So, yeah. It'll be a puzzle to me until the day I die. But when you see people trying to get away with garbage, I just had a phone call today here from a guy who heard from an astronomer down in Virginia Tech that it was crash test dummies that explained Roswell.
Is that right? Today?
Today.
I think I was standing over there when that call came in.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what can I say?
Yeah.
So it's a big subject, not getting the attention it deserves, but
yeah.
Maybe some clever reporter will come along and blow the lid off.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Stan, starting to crowd in here.
Yeah, I guess it's time.
Yeah,
don't forget my website, www.stantonfriedman.com.
Thanks a lot, Stan.
Pleasure.
Good to see you.
Thank you for listening to our show, and please remember to check out our website, podcastufo.com, for the latest blogs and forums. We will be back next week. Thanks again, and remember, keep your eyes to the sky.